Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, we are identifying and plugging into your source of inspiration, support, motivation, accountability, and love. What makes you tick? It's important to understand what lifts you up and gives you hope if you want to tap into a steady stream, and just as important, what keeps you down, if you want to make sure to avoid toxic, counterproductive negativity. So often we just coast through life, consuming and regurgitating and not questioning why, how, or if it's healthy or harmful. Remember, you have the power to control what you consume and what takes root. Getting close to the fire, step back, or at least put on some protective gear. Just don't stand there mesmerized by the intoxicating flames. Ready to check your source before plugging in? When you think of joy, what comes to your mind? Who comes to your mind? Joy is defined as a feeling of great pleasure and happiness. If joy could be prescribed, I would want a daily dose at least. I have met people through my work who've told me they've never felt joy. Let that sink in for a minute. They feel as though they have never experienced joy, great pleasure, or happiness. The thought of that breaks my heart. I'm not naive enough to believe that every day can be full of sunshine and rainbows, but I do believe it's something we should strive for. Some believe joy is inside of us, and we just have to be willing to let it out. Others believe joy happens through meaningful connections, being around people who are glad to be with you. I think joy is the best remedy for sadness. We all will face trials and disappointments, losses and tragedies, but there should be the hope of light at the end of a dark tunnel. Or what would motivate you to take a step forward? Happiness is the big payoff. Isn't that what everyone is seeking? Find happiness and you will find joy, or vice versa. Donna Rockwell digs into this question in her article for Desperately Seeking Happiness. What does it mean to be happy? It is the most elusive of questions and permeates much of our daily lives. While we toil away, we secretly pray for happiness. I just want to be happy, so many people say. But do we even know what happiness is? Recently, a science of happiness has cropped up in the field of psychology. There are many studies on every aspect of happiness, the most acclaimed of all human pursuits. After much scientific discussion and review, researchers have come to define happiness as the ability to sustain an overall sense of well-being over time. However, the capacity to generate and maintain well-being while coping with daily challenges requires a certain amount of emotional flexibility. Several years ago, scientists suggest that a person's happiness might have a particular set point, a level above which he or she does not usually reach. Recent studies are finding new and interesting trends. Dr. Sonia Leibermersky, happiness researcher and author of The How of Happiness, says that people are more able to play a direct role in the attainment of their own joy than earlier studies actually indicated. Her research showed that happiness levels increased when people took a few surprisingly simple steps: count blessings, reframe situations in a positive light, and perform acts of kindness. Those participants who expressed gratitude and kept an optimistic outlook were less depressed and happier than the control group. Happy people choose to be happy by taking steps to ensure it. It might not be as difficult as it sounds. Filmmaker Woody Allen says, "Everyone's already happy, only they don't know it." So perhaps obtaining happiness is more of a question of uncovering the joy that is already within us. Through this reorientation, we start to glimpse our own wellspring of happiness. Another important aspect is human connection and physical touch. An Australian study measured the relationship between the health and happiness of almost 60,000 men. This study found that men who hugged scored above the national male average for happiness, were thinner, and even wealthier than men who didn't hug. The evidence is clear: more hugs equals more happiness. The problem is that most of us are looking for happiness in all the wrong places, chasing after these wisps rather than the real thing. There is a big difference between hedonic happiness, getting a shiny new car, and eudaimonic happiness, focusing on meaning. Contrary to some of our innermost fears, happiness is not something to be earned. Every person has a birthright to it. At the same time, there is no happiness handbook. In the quest to discover exactly how to achieve the happiness we all desperately seek, we can listen to highly revered Tibetan Lama Gelug Rinpoche, the spiritual director of Jewel Art in Ann Arbor. Sitting quietly in his office, the Lama was asked, "What helps people experience a richer life?" "Satisfaction," he quickly answered. "It's very important to learn how to be satisfied with whatever you have in life. And desire? Desires have no limitations. They always want. If you let desire run your life, you're in big trouble. And if you know how to have satisfaction and be happy, then you'll know how to manage your life, no matter whether you're rich, poor, man, woman, child, whatever you may be. Compassion is key to happiness, and compassion is based on love." Eudaimonic happiness is experienced as a byproduct of love. While watching a sunset, viewing a work of art, taking a walk on a beach, or listening to the sounds of a favorite song, we transcend our ordinary state of mind and feel happiness deep in our belly, happiness that softens our heart. A new designer handbag, handsome as it may be, can never deliver this kind of happiness. In writing her book, The Happiness Project, Gretchen Rubin discovered some truths about her own. "I did everything within my power to appreciate the life I have now, just as it is," she says. "Authentic happiness is never lost, because it is burned into the very essence of our being. It remains a touchstone within us that can be accessed at any time, no matter what is going on around us. We need only conjure up images of happiness or remember an event or moment, and we're there, alive in the energy of our own awareness. Happiness, we come to see, is not out there in what we can acquire or even achieve. It's a place we discover within, a place that we can return to at will, reconnecting with the richness of our own human life. Charlie Brown and the characters from Peanuts know what happiness is. They sing about it in the song Happiness from the show You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Happiness is finding a pencil, pizza with sausage, telling the time. Happiness is learning to whistle, tying your shoe for the very first time. Happiness is playing the drum in your own school band. Happiness is walking hand in hand. Happiness is morning and evening, daytime and nighttime. For happiness is anyone and anything at all that's loved by you. In the end, loving and being loved, that's what happiness is. So many times we look for gratitude as a way to find happiness. I'm thankful, so I must be happy. Finding joy in the mundane, the automatic, and the simple. Think about your day today. When did you smile? When did you laugh? What happened and what didn't happen? Fill in the blanks with a recreation of your favorite day and notice the small things that would or could bring you joy. I love to sleep in. At least I think I do. So to me, that brings me excitement. I rarely, in fact, sleep late, but knowing I have a free Saturday morning that could lend itself to some extra Z's is happiness. I love hot coffee that stays hot to the last drop. So delightful. I love to laugh, so whether it's a silly joke or a well-thought-out comedy, I'm there. I'm a sucker for a warm dessert. Doesn't matter what it is, but if it's bubbly with a cold ice cream scoop, whoa. I love to hear, that's good, after I've slaved over a hot stove. Nothing makes me smile more than a compliment for a job well done. I find joy in being there for someone who needs a little extra encouragement. That feeling makes my heart sing. Make your own list and then look for a common source. Do you find a joyful feeling when you surround yourself with positive people? Does serving others in need bring you happiness? What about motivation? What do you plug into to inspire you to want to do better, go further, or try harder? You might be motivated by fear, guilt, peer pressure, or more of an internal clock pushing you to push forward. Let's explore why we are motivated before we uncover the what or the who. Brianna Steinhilber wrote about three types of motivation in her article for Better by Today. We all have motivation that ebbs and flows. Isn't that the truth? Some mornings you wake up energized to get to work and power through the to-do list. Others you might smack the alarm clock, curse the morning, and give yourself an extra 5 minutes to dream about putting in your notice or getting on the first flight out to a tropical location. Not to mention the peaks and valleys that we experience within just one day. First thing in the morning with a workout, an espresso under your belt, we're feeling like a walking advertisement for motivation. By the time the afternoon munchies kick in, we're counting down the hours until we can throw in the towel. But identifying the why behind the actions you perform can make finding the motivation to do them easier on those days when you're feeling a little less than inspired. Whether you're dragging yourself to the gym or fighting the mental battle against procrastination at work, making a mental shift to reconnect to your source of motivation can give you the boost to get it done. So here are three types of motivations. Now, motivations are primarily separated into two categories, extrinsic and intrinsic. Good news, if neither of these gets the job done, researchers have identified a third type of motivation that's impressively effective. So let's explore the first type, extrinsic. Doing an activity to attain or avoid a separate outcome. Chances are, many of the things you do each day are extrinsically motivated. According to research published by the Contemporary Educational Psychology, extrinsic motivation is a construct that pertains whenever an activity is done in order to attain some separate outcome, like exercising to lose weight, learning to speak Italian to impress your friends, or getting to work on time to avoid being yelled at by your boss. Extrinsic motivation is doing something for the external reward you get from it. In your career, this can include financial gain, benefits, perks, and even avoiding getting fired, says Shauna Clark, owner of Clark Executive Coaching, a leadership development company. When you find your inspiration warning, refocusing on external rewards is a quick way to recommit to a goal or activity. Whether that be performing well at work or sticking to an exercise routine. If you find yourself grumbling through your commute each day to perform a job you're not crazy about, Try focusing on the external rewards, be it the paycheck that pays your rent or the health insurance that takes care of you, even the free fruit in the cafeteria to get motivated. Now let's discuss intrinsic, an internal drive for success or sense of purpose. The Journal of Contemporary Educational Psychology defines intrinsic motivation as doing an activity for its inherent satisfaction rather than for some separate consequence. When intrinsically motivated, a person is moved to act for the fun or challenge rather than because of external products, pressures, or rewards. Hopefully, you have a handful of actions you perform each day that fall under this bucket. Your job may not provide obvious sources of intrinsic motivation, but perhaps you head out for a run because you enjoy the experience of unplugging and pounding the pavement, or help your neighbor carry their groceries up the stairs because you genuinely feel good about doing it. Intrinsic motivation is doing something because it feels good to you. You feel internally rewarded for doing it. In a job, this can be doing work that feels purposeful, enjoying time with your teammates, or achieving goals you've set for yourself. For example, you're a financial advisor and feel genuine satisfaction from being able to help people manage their money in a way that betters their lives. Or you're a marketing executive who enjoys brainstorming new campaigns with your colleagues. Many people find it harder to identify sources of motivation in this bucket. Who actually enjoys running or spending 40 hours a week behind a desk? There is some convincing evidence to encourage all of us to identify our sources of intrinsic motivation, though. In a study of 14 years of data, researchers looked at the motivations and outcomes for more than 10,000 incoming cadets at West Point Military Academy. What they found was that cadets with primarily internal motives were about 20% more likely to make it through training than average. Plus, those with external motivations had a 10% lower chance of sticking with a military career and a 20% lower chance of being promoted early. Just because you don't immediately see the connection with your own job doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Step back and take a look at the role you perform each day, and look for sources of success or purpose. For example, you may not care much about the product your company sells or find satisfaction in fielding phone calls, but as a customer service rep, you can focus on feeling good about the people you were able to help throughout the day and use that as a source of motivation to keep working hard. But what about this third motivator? You know, the one thrown in at the last minute. Well, it's family. Motivated by the desire to provide for your loved ones. Finding intrinsic motivation isn't always easy, especially for those of us who aren't passionate about our work. Luckily, there is a way to compensate. Think about your family. This has emerged as a third source of motivation proven to be a strong source of inspiration, even for those who do not feel intrinsically or extrinsically motivated to do something. A new study published in the Academy of Management Journal looked at a group of factory workers whose job entailed performing the same mundane task day after day without any rewards for good performance. You'd think in the absence of both intrinsic and extrinsic motivator, the workers would have little incentive to work hard in their roles. But what researchers found was that some people who lack both kinds of motivation are still spurred on by the third factor called family motivation. Those who identified with the statement, "I care about supporting my family," felt more energized and performed better each day, even when they didn't find the work enjoyable and had no financial incentive to perform it. Family motivation can relate to both intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. If family is a top value of yours, then your family can serve as intrinsic motivators. If you feel family pressure or obligation, then that's more of an extrinsic motivator. As organizational psychologist Nick Tassler says, every job, whether you're washing dishes or performing kidney surgery, provides us with the opportunity to affirm our identities as capable, respectable individuals upon whom the most important people in our lives can rely. Now, we know the why, but let's get back to the who or what. What motivates you? Look at your life, your daily responsibilities, and your goals. Having someone to look up to, a mentor, a coach, an accountability partner, is great. But what if you're just trying to survive and your motivation is rooted in fear? Doesn't sound like a daily dose of joy is part of your routine. Well, we are here to check it before you wreck it. So, how do you let go of fear, unplug, and reroute your lines to joy? First, why are we motivated by fear? I found an article that explains why fear is a poor motivator at 7health.com. As humans, we are hardwired to seek pleasure and to avoid pain. According to Freud, as children, this desire is the driving principle behind all choices, that it's about immediate gratification. But as we enter adulthood, we learn to delay gratification, which is known as the reality principle. As part of this, one is able to rationalize the desire for long-term pleasure, and so in the short term, is able to endure the pain of one type or another. Regularly, people will attempt to use fear as a way of helping to seek these long-term results. They believe that fear will help keep them motivated to delay gratification in the anticipation of something better. They focus on how unhappy they are with their body, and they create a sense of fear that this will go on unless they make a change. This then becomes the impetus for eating better or getting to the gym or whatever changes they choose to make. The problem with this is that while fear can be an effective motivator, this only works in the short term. It might help you get to the gym for a couple of weeks, or it might help you eat better for a little while, but over the long haul, it doesn't last. A 2014 report from Canada about heart attack and stroke survivors shows this perfectly. Having a stroke or heart attack is a pretty major event, and in the majority of cases, diet and lifestyle habits are a contributing factor, if not a major factor, for why someone has one of these events at all. This is the kind of thing that you'd expect would give you a wake-up call, if you survived it. Something that would make you reassess your life and have you thinking, I need to make a change. And this is exactly what the Canadian report showed, with 6 in the 10 survivors, even going as far as to equate surviving the episode with being given a second chance at life and no longer taking their health for granted. But what's interesting is that when it came to making these changes, more than 50% couldn't maintain it or didn't even try at all. Despite possibly the biggest wake-up call someone could give them, it was an effective long-term motivator for less than half the survivors. And this is how most people approach dieting or making a lifestyle change. Something happens that induces a sense of fear or worry or negativity. You realize you've put on some weight and you can't fit into a certain dress or pair of jeans. You stand on a set of scales and realize your weight has increased. You book a summer holiday, do the math, and discover that there's only 7 weeks until you go away and can't possibly go while looking like this. You decide that this is it. This is now going to be your time to make a change. Week 1 is easy. Week 2 is not so bad either. But as time goes on, the tougher it gets. The fear that you had on this initial day slowly starts to lose its power as you don't get the results as quickly as you'd hoped. Sure, you're happy to defer gratification, but now you're wondering if it's actually going to happen. Are you going to get that body you're after, or is this just making you miserable with no long-term payoff? You were so determined, but now it just seems like a lot of hard work, and so it becomes more and more likely that you're going to chuck in the towel. The problem with fear as a motivator is it's limited in its ability to create motivation over the long term. It can be a helpful spark for some people, but if this is all you've got, it's highly likely to lead to failure. As humans, we seek pleasure or avoid pain. While someone's weight or appearance can initially start out as the pain to avoid, over time, exercise or healthy eating can become the new pain to avoid. It's important to create ways to actually enjoy the process of change. Yes, you heard it. It's important to create ways to actually enjoy the process of change, to find an exercise that you enjoy, to find healthy foods that you find palatable and are happy to eat, to do things in ways that are sustainable and fairly easy to keep up, because you don't have to constantly convince yourself of the future pleasure you'll receive because you're getting immediately pleasured. I have no way of knowing, but my hunch is that those who had a heart attack and kept up with their new healthy lifestyle didn't do it purely because of fear. They learned to enjoy the changes, so they didn't feel like a chore, but felt appreciative of the opportunity to get to do this stuff. So, does it all come back to perception? So much of life does. How you see things directly affects how you react to things. What you hear and believe dictates how you respond. We are to be held accountable, but responsible for us and everyone around us? I think these are definitions we've imposed throughout our lifetime. What happens if you unplug and reroute to a more positive source? For me, I had to start listening to myself. For too long, I had modeled and shaped my life based on the thoughts and opinions of others. What to say, what to do, who to be, and how to feel. I couldn't even hear myself if I was trying to assert my own ideas at all. I had to take a step back and sit with my own thoughts and feelings to be able to recognize them as my own. Once I was able to tap in and listen to myself, I started gaining confidence and I trusted what I heard. I'm looking out for me, and that's okay. It's not selfish or self-centered, it's responsible. Once I was in tune to myself, I started looking for sources of inspiration that were truly inspiring, out for my greater good, and ones that brought me joy. When I let go of fear and my obsession to be responsible for everyone around me and my need to please, I found so much extra time and energy that I could channel into whatever source served me. I needed time by myself, time with God, and time with positive people who also want to plug into the positive. So, I plug into my connections. I need to encourage and serve in a healthy and constructive way. So I plug in to volunteering. I need to create, design, and impact my surroundings with art. So I plug in to creativity. I need to explore and grow books, language, new ideas, hobbies. So I plug in to education. InspiredGoodVibes.com helps us with 10 ways to stay connected to good energy every day. To live the good life, you want to connect to good energy and stay connected in order to move into a higher vibrational frequency. When you've tapped in and aligned with these positive energies, you're happier. Everything else aligns. synchronicities occur, and life just flows. Would you want to live any other way? Here are 10 ways to stay connected to good energy every day. The first two are the most important because they instantly raise your vibration and are the building blocks for the other eight. But as you will see, they all pay off one way or another to help you stay connected to good vibes. Number one, have a spiritual practice. It's important to have some sort of spiritual practice in your life so that you're fully connected and aligned with good energy. To connect to Source, your higher power, your God, universe, whatever you want to call it, spend at least a few minutes every morning in either meditation, silence, visualization, or journaling. You could also read something uplifting or spiritual. It doesn't take much to connect, but it's important to find a way that works for you. Number two, connect to your body. You need to pay attention to your body as well as your spirit. Mind, body, and spirit are intertwined, and they all affect your vibrational energy. One of the goals of exercise, besides getting you in shape and having a healthy mind, is to release any stress or negativity that is stuck and that you're holding on to. The more of a sweat you work up, the more you can release those negative energies and the better off you'll be energetically. Your body will even thank you by releasing dopamine into your system, so it's a win-win. You can connect to your body temple with some form of movement or exercise. If working out isn't your thing, go for a short walk, do some stretches, or join a yoga, tai chi, or dance class, anything that gets you moving. Raise your vibrational frequency first thing every morning and pave the way for a great day. Number three, monitor your thoughts. Your thoughts are one of the keys to manifesting because they're constantly sending out either low or high vibrational frequencies. Your thoughts create your feelings, which becomes your state of mind or mood, which sends out either good or bad vibes. When you're thinking good, you're feeling good, so you're sending out good vibes to the universe. Buddha's famous quote, "What you think, so shall you be." Or Shakespeare's, "There is nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Are just two examples of how powerful your thoughts are. Remember, what you're sending out, you attract. So get in the habit of monitoring your thoughts, making sure you're sending out only positive and good vibes. When you live in the present, you're able to check in with your feelings often and see what type of vibes you're sending out. Number four, trust. Trust that you're connected. Let go and surrender to something bigger than yourself. You don't need to do all the work. When you're connected and tapped into your higher power, things line up and ideas come to you. That's because you're functioning at 10 times the power. All the great spiritual leaders, teachers, and geniuses spoke about tapping into something else. Alexander Graham Bell said, "What this power is, I cannot say. All I know is that it exists." Stay connected to the good energy and know that when you're connected, you can always ask for guidance. You can ask for assistance or help whenever you need it. Ask silently or out loud, but ask. Let go, let God. It's a good mantra to have. Number five, be present. The present is your home base for vibrations and where you find power because it's in each moment that you're thinking, feeling, and acting. The more you live in the present, the stronger your vibrations will be, the more conscious and aware you are moment to moment, and more you'll be able to create energy shifts and stay living in a field of good energy all day. When you're present, you can tune in to your higher self and receive from the universe. Then you can become a conduit for all good energy and good vibes. Number six, live in love. Not fear, doubt, and worry. Love is a creative, expansive, and high vibrational frequency that nullifies low energy. Dr. David R. Hawkins writes in his book, Power Versus Force, love is a state of being. It is forgiving, nurturing, and supporting way of relating to the world. It is the capacity to lift others and accomplish great feats because of its purity of motive. Fear, on the other hand, is a destructive, low energy that destroys optimism and attracts other low vibrational energies like doubt and worry. They're all energies that sabotage you and diminish your personal power. You don't want to send it out, and therefore you don't want to attract it. Always think love over fear, doubt, and worry to live in the highest vibrational field. Number 7, allow and follow the energy. The habit of allowing life to flow and not resisting what it is an invaluable lesson to learn. Learn to go with the stream instead of swimming upstream and trying to fight the tide. Don't resist. It's the resistance that causes you stress. Get out of the habit of pushing to make things happen. When you're hitting roadblocks and trying to force things to happen, try feeling where the energy is pulling you and move in that direction instead. Chances are it's leading you to something better, but you just can't see it. That's how energy works and why trust is so important. The energy in the quantum field is intelligent, so start paying attention, and when it's trying to tell you something, listen. Take spiritually aligned action, but pulled by the good energy, and allow life to flow. Number 8, honor yourself and your choices. Are you honoring yourself? Are you making choices that honor you? If you're not sure, look at how they make you feel, because that's your answer. Here's a tip. Your feelings are always the answer. Make choices that honor you and promote your mental, physical, and emotional health. This kind of piggybacks on living in love instead of fear, doubt, and worry. Because when you're living in those low vibrations, it's really hard to honor yourself and make the right choices. Honoring yourself is about letting go of the past and your past mistakes. Knowing that you made the best decisions where you were with what you had to go on at the time. Don't let past energies hang around and sabotage the present. Chances are you have enough to deal with in the present. Why allow old energies to take up valuable time and space? Hashtag let it go. Number 9, be grateful. Gratitude is one of the highest vibrational frequencies next to love and one of the keys to manifesting. The more grateful thoughts you have, the more grateful you become, and it becomes a loop of good energy attracting more good energy. Once you start to see and think about all the good that's happening in your life, it opens you up to even more good, and you'll start to see the good in everything. The grateful mind continually expects good things. Gratitude brings your whole mind into closer harmony with the creative energies of the universe. Number 10, give. The energy of giving and receiving are two sides of the same coin. When you help others, you raise your own vibration. The vibration of the person you're helping, and you also raise the vibrations of everyone who is witnessing the good deed. Giving is that powerful of an energy. You can create this amazing energy and raise a ton of vibrations simply by giving and helping others. As you give, so shall you receive. And in receiving, you then become grateful, which sends out even more good vibes. Good energy always creates more good energy. Thanks for sticking with me. We have been talking about unplugging from the negativity and plugging back into the positive. So I hope you've been able to see joy and happiness from a different light. It's so important to not accept a negative feeling, not accept where you are. If you're feeling down, if you're feeling unloved, unappreciated, not listened to, not plugged in to good and positive people, You don't have to stay there. You have choices. Remember the power that you have to make a choice. You can unplug from that negativity, reroute your lines, and plug back into positivity. Find out what makes you happy. Some people walk through life and never really know that. They don't take time to explore those feelings on their own, not worried about everyone else around you, but just your own heart. What makes your heart sing? What brings a smile to your face? What brings light to your eyes? How can you recreate that? Is it a healthy connection? Is it a feeling of gratification? Something of a job well done? Being appreciated? Really take some time and explore those feelings. It could be simple as the Peanuts gang and finding a pencil or a sausage pizza. You know, it could be a hot cup of coffee to the very end. It could be the chance to sleep in. It's important that you find your motivator. What makes a difference in your life? I hope you'll spend some time wrestling with those questions, really digging deep, listening to your heart, and connecting with your higher power, finding out what's important to you. Share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they are not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, evaluate your current source of energy and unplug when you feel depleted. You have the power to choose a more positive power of inspiration. Plug in and share your joyful current with others. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you, how I wound up here. All I needed was a rock that I can lean on. All you needed was some wind beneath your wings. We might be seeing things from different points of view, but that